Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you live today from Nashville, Tennessee, where it is a fantastically beautiful early fall day. I hope it's beautiful where you are as well. Interesting developments on the issue of abortion in America, especially last week's decision in New Jersey, where a decision was reversed on a very interesting question related to abortion. We're going to be looking to that case, but we're also going to be coming back, not just looking at what happened in the New Jersey Supreme Court, but rather taking inventory about where we stand on the issue of abortion today. And I don't mean just by polls and surveys and all the rest, but where do you think we are as a nation? You know, we're now 30 years past Roe v. Wade, and we're looking at a reality in which at least one generation has grown up assuming a constitutional right to abortion just as a fact of life. And yet, you could also say that there are trends indicating that perhaps the conscience of America is perhaps changing somewhat on the issue of abortion. And the evidence for that is the fact, as we've looked at on this program before, very few doctors want to go into this field. There is still shame attached to the practice of abortion, and for good reason. We're going to be taking inventory today. Where do we stand? What does it look like where you live? And we're going to be looking at this decision and what it means about telling the truth about abortion. First, to review some other issues in the news. Today is Constitution Day. That is a federal holiday. It's not a federal holiday as in the offices being closed. It's a federal day for observance. And it is a reminder to us of how little most Americans know about the Constitution. Not only will most Americans go through this day blissfully unaware that it is Constitution Day, but they're also basically blissfully unaware of what is in the Constitution. In this case, what you don't know can hurt you. As a matter of fact, ignorance of the Constitution can hurt all of us. We need to remember the fact that the United States Constitution, now over 200 years old, is the most venerable constitutional document in the history of humanity. It has lasted longer and served more faithfully than any compact, constitution, or covenant adopted by human beings as a political means of organization. It is Constitution Day, and so there are questions being asked, polls and surveys of Americans, and one is out that is being reported today. The First Amendment Center reports that 64% of Americans who were contacted by this poll could name freedom of speech as one of the freedoms enshrined in the First Amendment. And yet, after freedom of speech, less than 20% of Americans could name any other freedom enshrined in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Now, what's really, really interesting is that that means that most Americans aren't thinking about freedom of religion. They're not thinking about freedom of association. They're not thinking about rights of due process and all the rest. What they're thinking about is freedom of speech because that's the one thing they know. And that is a disastrous ignorance of the U.S. Constitution on the part of the American people. Constitution Day is one of those things that, just like so many other days, is a mark on the calendar. But the reality is that it is a catalyst for reminding us how little most Americans know about the Constitution. And what they don't know, as I said, is dangerous because they will not recognize that many of the freedoms and liberties enshrined in the Constitution, an orderly form of republican government, little r, a republic created by this Constitution, an orderly democratic process, all of this is enshrined in a document that is absolutely necessary for the perpetuation of this social order. Without it, we will have something like legal anarchy. It's bad enough that we've got courts eroding the Constitution. It's bad enough that there are public debates over whether the founders' vision of the Constitution should prevail. It's even worse when Americans don't even know what the Constitution is really all about. Well, in Canada, it's not so much an issue of the Constitution, but an issue of the family. There's a major report out there indicating from the 2006 census in Canada that the redefinition of the family is really progressing there. The latest household figures from the 2006 census in Canada show a significant increase in the number of same-sex couples and a first-ever count of same-sex marriages. This from Toronto's Globe and Mail. Now, reading from the report, it says at the same time, there are more common law families, more childless couples, more people living alone, and a greater number of single parent households in Canada than ever before. Listen to these stats. The census counted 45,345 same-sex couples. That's 45,000, where virtually there have been none in the past. Now almost 50,000, up 32% from 2001, and that represents 0.6% of all couples in Canada. Now, the Globe and Mail also says, not surprisingly, half of these couples lived in the three largest census metropolitan areas of Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver. Very, very interesting as you look at Canada. Canada, in so many ways, in terms of its social structure, is more like Europe than like the United States. They watch American television, are very much a part of the American economy, and not only the North American Free Trade Agreement and all the rest, but in terms of its social structures, it still is perhaps more like Europe, certainly in terms of liberal social policies. And so even as we're watching over across our northern border, we realize that the future of Canada, just like the future of Europe, could be a pointer to where these same social trends could point in the United States. Now, another interesting fact in Canada is that the traditional nuclear family, that's the family of two people married to each other, a heterosexual couple with their children, is less than before, with a rather surprising increase in lone parent families. Now, one of four Canadian families with children is a single parent family. And that's another very interesting thing to watch. That means 2.1 million Canadian children now in what is called there, not a one parent family, but just in the Canadian parlance, a lone parent family. Somehow that almost seems more accurate than a one parent family. In my website today at albertmiller.com, I posted an article entitled Gen X Humanism for the Passionately Confused, A Chaplain for Unbelief at Harvard. A lot of people will be shocked to know that Harvard University now has a chaplain for unbelievers, a humanist, secularist, agnostic, atheist, freethinker, whatever you want to call him, chaplain. His name is Greg Epstein. He's 30 years old, and the Boston Globe has written a major article about him. And the article begins at a funeral service over which Reverend Epstein is presiding. And it notes that even as he is preparing to preside over this funeral, he's carrying a book of readings appropriately titled Funerals Without God. Now, the Boston Globe describes this humanist chaplain as, quote, a kind of ministerial paradox, a member of the local clergy who disavows God, preaches to atheists and agnostics, and seeks to build the equivalent of a church for nonbelievers and others skeptical of or alienated by religion. Now, isn't it interesting that humanists and other unbelievers would need a chaplain? I mean, after all, if your entire worldview is about the rejection of the supernatural and the fact that there is no source of ultimate or transcendent meaning, then why do you need a chaplain? Well, in some sense, I want to argue that there is a psychological need in all human beings for faith and for belief. And if it is not focused upon the proper object of faith, which is the one true and living God through Jesus Christ, it's going to be focused on something else, even among the people who say they're unbelievers, because there's no one who's a total unbeliever. They're a believer in something, even if it's a believer in agnosticism or atheism or freethinking or humanism. Let me go back to the article. It says here, in a world where zealots crash planes into buildings in the name of God and politicians use the Bible to craft public policy, Epstein sees himself as in the vanguard of an emerging movement fueled by the rise of skepticism, advances in science and technology, and a spreading aversion toward radical religious ideologies and traditions. He and other humanists who call themselves atheists, agnostics, freethinkers, secularists, or brights point to a survey published in January which found that 20% of Americans between the ages of 18 and 25 say they have no religious affiliation or consider themselves atheists or agnostics. That, according to the report, is nearly double what was found in a similar survey 20 years ago. The article is pretty massive in terms of the Boston Globe. It goes into a lot of detail about Reverend Epstein and his work. It also deals with the fact that he is the subject of no little controversy among other atheists, because he has been critical of some of the militant atheists, such as Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, suggesting that they do the movement harm. The more radical forces have shot back at him, and in fact, it is one of the atheists who calls his approach Gen X humanism for the passionately confused. You know, I think whether you are a Christian believer or a radical atheist, you're pretty much agreed that this is Gen X humanism for the passionately confused. What you're looking at here is a generation that is confused, a generation looking for answers, and it's interesting that the Boston Globe, the very same day, should come out with a major story indicating that American universities are failing students by failing to deal with the big questions of life. Overtaken by business and commerce and other concerns, they're suggesting that the universities are failing in this task. Harvard, well, let's just say it has decided to address this in a very unusual way. They're in the Harvard Memorial Church, a chaplain for humanists, secularists, unbelievers. There's something deeply tragic about that, and certainly deeply ironic as well. In a university founded by Orthodox Christians centuries ago for the training of Christian ministers. Even more ironic is the fact that there are a lot of people who believe just this little in a lot of liberal churches and denominations. They just don't have the nerve to call themselves unbelievers. Back to talk about where we stand on abortion in America today. The phone number is 877-893-8255, live from Nashville, Tennessee. This is the Albert Miller Program. I was surprised last week by this decision that was handed down by the New Jersey Supreme Court on abortion. I wasn't surprised about where the court came out. I was surprised about some of the amazingly graphic language, very clear language used within the decision. Here is what happened. You had a case that was at the New Jersey Supreme Court on appeal. The plaintiff who was appealing the case was a woman by the name of Rose Acuna. She had charged that several years ago, in 1996, she had an abortion that was performed by Dr. Sheldon C. Turkish. She said that in the course of considering whether or not to have this abortion, she already had two young children under the age of three. She was encouraged to have this abortion, she says, by the doctor who warned her about health consequences. He says he did not, that she brought up abortion. But the bottom line is, she says in this case that she asked him, about the baby within her, if it was a baby. And supposedly he said, no, it's just blood. Don't be stupid, according to the court documents. He supposedly said, it's only blood. Nonetheless, after she had the abortion, the nurse that was assisting said that she was going to have to rest because they were having some difficulty getting out some of the parts of the baby. She says at that point, she all of a sudden realized that abortion wasn't what she had told it was, had been told it was. She suffered post-traumatic stress disorder. And she also, you know, brought this case against the doctor. And very interestingly, she says that informed consent, which is the basic principle of medical ethics, that no patient should have any procedure undertaken without informed consent, without knowing what it's all about, the risks and what actually is taking place. She said that she was denied that informed consent. And she called for doctors in New Jersey performing abortions to be required to tell patients that this is the termination of a living human being. Now, the 5-0 decision handed down by the New Jersey Supreme Court squashed her hopes. She is going to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, according to her attorney, but basically they rejected her claims out of hand. But I want you to hear something of the logic that the court used in dismissing it out of hand. Justice Barry T. Albin wrote the 5-0 decision. He said, quote, there is not even remotely a consensus among New Jersey's medical community or citizenry that the plaintiff's assertions are medical facts as opposed to firmly held moral, philosophical, and religious beliefs to support the establishment of the duty she would impose upon all physicians. Now, let's just look at this unanimous decision for a moment, because some of the language is just absolutely fascinating. As a matter of fact, looking through the decision, it was sometimes hard to know where you should actually choose sections to read. Listen to this. This is from the justice's opinion. By demanding that a physician advise a pregnant woman that her non-viable embryo, quote, is in all material respects equivalent to a person born and alive, end quote, plaintiff would require that the doctor convey a value judgment, not a medical fact. That according to the judge whose decision was sustained. But then there's a lot of other stuff here that's just, it is both chilling and very telling about where we are. Now, you also have some amazing statements in this document, in this decision, in which it appears that accidentally the judge, in this case the justice on the New Jersey Supreme Court, really does get it. Because he says in this opinion that if indeed Ms. Acuna's desire was reflected in the law, and a doctor was required to tell the patient that he was going to be exterminating a human being, it would be the legal equivalent of murder. Well, bingo. That's exactly right. In other words, let's just reverse that logic for a moment and go backwards. What this judge's decision basically is, in its just clearest form, is a statement that if Ms. Acuna is right, and if this embryo, this fetus, this unborn human being is indeed recognized as a human being, then it would be murder to terminate that pregnancy. Now, this is exactly what the judge wrote. He wrote, an instruction suggesting that both the doctor and patient would be complicit in committing the equivalent of murder. Well, every once in a while, the truth gets out. Let's face it. We all know that it isn't just tissue. It isn't just blood. It isn't just and isn't just anything. It's a preborn human being. Every one of us started out and progressed through every one of those stages of gestation. Otherwise, we would not be here. Now, repeatedly throughout this document and the decision, you have the judge declaring, in this case, the judge writing on behalf of the other justices, declaring that there is no consensus on beginning of life questions, and so it's not a medical question at all. And thus, they kicked out and threw out the informed consent principle. They said instead this is a value judgment and not a medical fact, that it's deeply laden with philosophical and religious overtones. It's not medically ascertainable as to when life begins. Now, the really chilling part of that statement to me is, well, what about someone who is born? What about where you're dealing with someone who is outside of the womb? What if you're dealing with end-of-life issues? I think this kind of logic tells us very quickly where we could be. I want you to tell me where you think we are on the abortion issue. We're over 30 years past Roe v. Wade. Do you just assume now that abortion's always going to be available, that it's the law of the land? Do you assume that there's no way to push back the clock? Do you assume there's no way to reach the conscience of America on this issue? Let me give you some encouragement. The younger you go in America, the more pro-life conviction you will find. Young people these days seem to be much less ready than their parents to endorse abortion on demand. But at the same time, there has to be the disheartening reality that 30-plus years after Roe v. Wade, we've had very few successes in terms of contending for the sanctity of human life. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to know what you're seeing where you are. I want to know where you think we are as a nation on this. Judge America, not so much just by the statistics, but by how you read the national pulse on the question of abortion. Do you think we have an opportunity to reach the conscience of America on this issue? If not, it's a severe indictment about where America is, not to mention where we are going. If so, how do we make the argument most cogently? How do we most powerfully present the pro-life argument so that we can get America understanding that it's not just tissue, not just blood, but a preborn, unborn human being? How can we reach the heart of America on this issue? This was a 5-0 slam dunk decision against the pro-life cause in New Jersey. It will be appealed, according to attorneys, to the United States Supreme Court, but I have no assurance of what would happen to it there. The victories in the pro-life movement have been few, especially in terms of the legal and political process. As a matter of fact, the greatest victory in advance for the pro-life movement has not taken place through legalities, but through technology. And that is the imaging that has allowed the view inside the womb so that so many mothers now know that that is not blood and tissue within them, but a human being. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want you to take the pulse on the issue of abortion where you are, and I want you to call and tell me what you see in your circle of friends, in your community, even as you watch the national scene. How do you think America now thinks about abortion? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Court cases, legislative issues, cultural catalysts dealing with abortion are many. But this particular decision handed down in New Jersey by the language of this opinion puts the issue clearly. Either it's just blood or tissue, in which case it is supposedly morally insignificant, or it is a human being. And as the judge says, if it is, then abortion is the equivalent of murder. The phone number 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Miller Program. Back with your calls.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Where do we stand on the issue of abortion today? A big question in this country, 30 years and more after Roe v. Wade, well over 40 million abortions performed in this country, a generation or two raised, assuming that abortion is just something that is available, and yet the nation's conscience clearly is not settled on this issue. The question is, where are we, and in which direction are we headed? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Beckley, West Virginia, where Abby's on the line. Go ahead, Abby.
Hi there. I just have a comment on how to reach America about this issue, and I think part of what may be helpful is the stories of the women themselves who have gone through so much grief and trauma after having abortions. I have friends who've had to bear that, and it's often a very silent, torturous experience. And I don't want to, you know, be putting a burden on them, but I think that those stories could reach, you know, America's conscience and the doctors who say it's just a philosophical religious issue.
You know, Abby, I'm absolutely convinced you are right, and I think the topic that really brought up this whole issue today, the event, and that was the court decision in New Jersey last week, really helps to make the case, because that case concerned a woman by the name of Rose Acuna, who was bold enough and courageous enough to tell her story. And her story was that she believed she was absolutely misled about what abortion was. And I want to go back to something that was a part of this story. Listen to this. According to Acuna, Turkish, that is the doctor, told her that she needed an abortion because your kidneys are messing you up. That according to court papers. Acuna asked Turkish whether the baby was already there. According to Acuna, Turkish replied, "Don't be stupid, it's only blood." Now listen to this. According to Rose Acuna, one of the nurses caring for her explained that the procedure was necessary, a later procedure, because the doctor had left parts of the baby inside of her. Thus, Acuna concluded, based upon the reference to the baby, that she had given consent to an abortion based upon erroneous information. That tells you a whole lot right there. Let's go to Angela, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Angela.
Yes, hi, Dr. Mohler. I'm an active pro-life Christian in Louisville, and I think it absolutely starts with education among each other. It starts with you and I just educating one another on the baby development in the womb and the procedures of abortion. I've been just dumbfounded how many Christians do not realize what goes on in just the procedure of abortion. And I've taken it upon myself to start a class at my church to teach these things, to teach the baby development and when they feel pain and at how early or how late they do abortions. And I think that is so important just to teach one another, especially in the churches.
Angela, you are absolutely right. And it's an indictment of so many pastors and ministers that they do not tell the truth about abortion. And that's not the main topic of the pulpit, which is the gospel. But if you're going to be applying the gospel to life, and you're going to be declaring the glory of God in the midst of his creation, you're going to have to talk about what it means to be human and why it is that human beings are the only creature made in the image of God. And then we're going to have to talk about why the Bible so clearly sets out a consistent life ethic, very much about the dignity of human beings made in the image of God. And as we start looking at the scripture, we're going to discover, and when you start looking at what the scripture says about human life, you're going to discover that it's not just an issue of why human beings are important. That's secondary. The first issue is that the glory of God is reflected in this creature, and thus to kill this creature is to deny the glory of God in a very concrete and sinful way. And, of course, we've now institutionalized that. Angela, very good point. And, you know, the other point that Angela made, I want to come back to, is that a lot of people are just ignorant of two things. As I recount what she said of two things. Number one, of the gestational process in the womb, just so that people can know there is a baby in there. And yet I want to go back to say, even before you can see it, it's still a human being made in the image of God and deserves protection from the moment of conception, which means fertilization, as I'm using the term, all the way until natural death. The other thing she said is that a lot of Americans are just ignorant of what abortion really entails. You know, that's how the abortion rights movement survives. Honestly, that's how it survives. If the average American, not to mention the average Christian, came to understand the true horror of abortion, they would demand an end to it. And they would not rest until it had been put to an end. But the fact is that most Americans do not know what it is. And I even have people call this program and say they wish I would not be so specific in talking about issues such as partial birth abortion and all the rest. But folks, if we don't talk about what it means to kill by saline injection stopping the heart and to dismember a baby in its mother's womb, then frankly, we're just not being honest about what's going on here. And as we're not honest, this leads to disaster. Back with your calls. This is the Albert Mueller Program. It was over 10 years ago that Rose Acuna in New Jersey had an abortion. She says the doctor told her that the unborn life within her was nothing more than blood and tissue. He said it was stupid that she would believe anything else. Then later she had to have a separate procedure in which she was told that body parts of the baby were being removed. That didn't add up to her. She suffered post-abortion stress syndrome. She sued the physician, and she sued demanding that the state of New Jersey require physicians to tell patients considering an abortion that this would mean the extermination of an existing human being. In a 5-0 decision, the New Jersey Supreme Court struck down her hopes last week. I want to read to you again from something in the decision. Listen to this. The instructions that plaintiff, that's Rose Acuna, would have us mandate obstetricians to give are certainly not the medical professional norm within this state. Well, no kidding. The judge went on to say that Rose Acuna has not pointed out whether even a small minority of physicians currently give such instructions. Well, she didn't claim that they do. She claimed that they should. Plaintiff has not directed us to any jurisdiction or any court that has found a common law duty requiring doctors to tell their pregnant patients that aborting an embryo is the killing of an existing human being. Now, these are the next few words right out of the judge's opinion. He says, an instruction suggesting that both the doctor and the patient would be complicit in committing the equivalent of murder. And that is absolutely so. And that, of course, is the whole point. The denial of the obvious is what we're talking about here. When the decision came to an end, the judge said on the profound issue of when life begins, this court cannot drive public policy in one particular direction by the engine of the common law when the opposing sides, which represent so many of our citizens, are arrayed along deep social, that is, societal and philosophical divides. And then, therefore, we do not find that the common law commands a physician to inform a pregnant patient that an embryo is an existing living human being and that an abortion results in the killing of a family member. Let me just point out that when the court says it can't drive in one direction or another, it then turns around and drives solidly in the pro-abortion direction. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Helen, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Helen.
Hi, I'm calling. I used to work in a clinic where they did abortions, and if what I have to say today will help someone keep from having one, I just would like to be heard. I used to work in the recovery room, and I felt like if I worked in recovery, I didn't have any part of the abortion, but the girls would wake up screaming, I've killed my baby, and things like that. But one day when I was helping clean the instruments, there was a perfectly formed little foot, and these babies are real living beings, and it's just wrong to do, and I can't believe the courts are not backing up and reversing the Roe versus Wade, that's what I have to say. I just hope people
Helen, stay with me, if you will. Number one, I want to thank you. Thank you for this call. That's one of the most powerful testimonies on this issue I've ever heard, and I just want to ask you, when you had that experience of seeing that foot, did it really tell you everything you need to know about abortion?
Well, not everything, but it told me what I was trying to keep from accepting. There was a movie, a documentary, a little documentary on babies in utero, and it was called Silent Scream, and it showed the expressions of that little baby trying to get away from that suction probe when they was trying to do the suction abortion, and it was awful. Because you can actually see the facial expression on these babies. And it was just powerful seeing that, too. And life is too short to end it before it can begin, you know.
Helen, thank you so much for your call. That's a very sweet and courageous testimony. And that movie, The Silent Scream, is now, I guess, a couple of decades old by Bernard Nathanson. And it's interesting that people will try to deny the obvious. For instance, you have people who say the expressions on that fetus, on that unborn baby, were simply the response, nervous response to stimuli. Yeah, right, such as a stimulus out to kill it. You know, that's where I have to go back again to say, if Americans as a whole had the experience that Helen had of seeing that little fully formed foot, they would call for abortion to be ended. If they had ever the experience of coming face to face with what abortion is all about, they would have to deal with it for what it is. They would respond to it with horror. They would demand that it be ended. They would be marching on the capitals of their states. They would be gathering in Washington, D.C. They would be inundating congressional offices and the senatorial offices and all the rest with petitions and with absolute demands that change come. They would under no circumstances allow this to continue because they would recognize with their own eyes what it is. They would see by the common grace of their moral vision what this is all about. And they would demand that it be ended and ended forever. But not everyone has seen what Helen has seen. A tragic number of Americans never even have to think about it. They can go through their everyday lives without anyone bringing this up. And no one often has the courage to say, you need to know what abortion is really all about. Helen's really helped us today with a courageous call from someone who was inside the abortion clinic when these things are taking place, even in the recovery room. And there she saw with her own eyes what was going on. And that was all she needed to see to really understand that there's something morally abhorrent beyond words in the practice of abortion. Rosa Cuna, this woman in New Jersey, is also courageous, as she was willing to take her case before successive courts. Now being turned down by the New Jersey Supreme Court, she is headed to the United States Supreme Court. And there at the nation's high court, she hopes to at least be able to have a hearing for her case. I think the conscience of America is increasingly pricked as more of these incidents come to light. And I don't know where America's going on the issue of abortion. I am not a prophet. I'm not able to look into the future and tell you where it's going. I am telling you that some four decades, as we're now into the fourth decade after Roe v. Wade, the evidence of the moral abhorrence of abortion is becoming more and more difficult to deny. And even as Americans attempt and do their very best to deny the obvious, the moral ugliness, abhorrence, and horror of abortion is becoming harder and harder to hide. I also appreciate the point made that the more women who have had abortions who talk about it and reflect upon what they did and the choice they made, the more you're going to hear the moral abhorrence of abortion and personal testimony. Now, I know there's some women out there who say, look, I wanted abortion, I had abortion, it's no big deal. But I really believe those women are few and far between. And I believe that you catch them at the right moment when they, too, have to face the reality of the missing child in their life. And they're going to have a very different story to tell. I'll be back in just a few moments with some final thoughts. Let's pray for America on this issue of abortion and the sanctity of human life. And let's not rest until we tell as many people as possible what's really at stake in this issue. Back in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, we either do or do not believe that every single human being is made in the image of God and thus worthy of protection. We either believe in the sanctity of every human life or we believe in the sanctity of some human lives. And then we have to come up with a distinguishing feature. Then we have to come up with some kind of moral argument for how we believe that some lives are worthy of protection and not others. That is a slippery slope that leads to moral disaster. And that's where America has been for the last 30 plus years. We've been in the position of saying we believe that some lives are worthy of protection, that some lives are sacred and some lives hold full human dignity, but not all lives and not under all circumstances. And if you believe that, then you set yourself up to be the arbiter, the decider of who shall live and who shall die. Now, human history tells us that when human beings have put themselves in that position, it has inevitably led to disaster. Look at the disaster of the Third Reich, where they had the category of life unworthy of life, known as Lebens und Wertensleben. They said there are certain lives unworthy of living. Now, we possess a knowledge in the year 2007 that previous generations have not had. We've been able to look inside the womb. We now see what previous generations have never seen. And thus, we cannot deny what even some previous generations would seek to deny. And that is the obvious. The fact that this is an unborn human being. That this is not merely blood and tissue. That even as we understand the miracle of fertilization, even as we understand the miracle of life from the very beginning, we understand that this is a miracle and God is creating in the womb another human being made in his image. The moment we decide that some lives are worthy of protection and not others, we set ourselves up for moral disaster because then we'll come up with entire categories of persons who are unworthy of that protection. It may be the unborn right now, over 40 million abortions performed in this country. It may be the elderly at some point. It may be the handicapped. It may be the infirm. It may be those. Well, Peter Singer at Princeton University says that those who do not have adequate linguistic and communication skills are unworthy of the full protection of human life. Thus, he says that infanticide, the killing of living out of the womb babies and children, might be morally acceptable. Folks, we are living in strange times. And as is so often the case, strange times can be dangerous times. We're living in a time in which the sanctity of human life is not only being argued about in the womb, but it's being argued about in the nursing home and in the hospital ward and elsewhere as well. We're living in a time in which genetic engineering and human cloning and all these other things present new challenges to us. And this much is clear. If we do not accept the sanctity and the value and the dignity of every single human life, if we do not protect every life from conception until natural death, we are the negotiators of the culture of death. We are the agents of our own moral destruction. Live today from Nashville, Tennessee, and back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.